Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm delighted to have back as a guest today Harlan Coben. We will be discussing Mr. Coben's new novel, Hold Tight, recently published by Dutton. And I would also like to mention that The Woods is now available in paperback. So first of all, Harlan, thanks for taking time out of a busy schedule to talk with us.
Always nice to be here, Casey. Thanks.
Harlan, with Hold Tight, it's a very provocative novel, a suspense novel. And I found it to be very interesting. It has a lot to do with secrets and technology and a lot of changes that are going on in the world today. And if you would tell the listeners a little bit about when you started out with Hold Tight, what it was you hoped to accomplish.
Well, the idea came from when I was having dinner with friends of mine who confessed that they had recently put spyware on their 15-year-old son's computer because they were worried about what he was doing on the Internet. And my gut reaction, my knee-jerk reaction was, I was gassed. I was thinking this is an invasion of privacy, blah, blah, blah. And I started to really think it through, and I realized the question really wasn't that easy. And moreover, it's a great way to start a novel. So what happens in here is Mike and Tia Bai have a troubled teen, and they're worried about him. And after much soul-searching, decide to put spyware on. And they get a message that says, just keep quiet and all safe. They see him reading a message saying that. And this not just affects them, but really spirals into a whole thing involving four other families in the suburbs and how their lives change and intersect and collide in tragic and surprising ways.
Mm-hmm. And in an author's note, Harlan, that you have prior to the start of the novel, you do mention that the technology used in the book is all real, and not only that, but you can obtain it very easily in the marketplace today.
Yeah, I mean, most of it is just downloadable with a click. Things are constantly changing, but yeah, all the stuff that you read is readily available.
Mm-hmm.
You can put GPSs on your kids' phones. You can monitor what every keystroke on a computer with no techno savvy whatsoever. Just click the download button and install it. You can tell it to send your reports daily, weekly, monthly, even lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not anything that's far-fetched. It's every day.
Mm-hmm. And Harlan, Lucas Lorimar, Susan Lorimar's 10-year-old son, plays an important part of the novel. He needs a kidney transplant. And again, one of the things I like about Hold Tight is you look at the societal impacts of privacy and the right to know at different ages of a person's life. And I really think you asked some interesting questions in terms of at what age do we have the right to know certain things in our lives?
Well, those are several of the central questions that this novel is sort of addressing. You know, how far do you go to protect your child? Where is that right to privacy? What ages? And there's no easy answers. I mean, there's five different families. Usually I read about, say, one person or two people, and I follow them and their story. This time there's five different families who are going through all different sort of what seemingly normal problems that escalate into murder and mayhem. And I think at the end of the book, I'm hoping to include that no one is really, aside from one person, too evil. Most people have the best of intentions or trying to do their best. You may conclude some parents went too far in watching their kids. Some people didn't go far enough. Some parents didn't go far enough. But there's no guarantees. This is a wonderful gray area to work with, and I think it's my most suspenseful novel. So I was really kind of thrilled. You know, my still thing, Casey, is to keep you up at night. I want you turning pages.
Mm-hmm.
I want you gripped. I want you to take this book on vacation, but you can't leave your hotel room because you have to find out and hold tight how it all turns out for Adam and Mike and Tia and Lucas and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's still what drives me.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, Hold Tight. It's hard to figure out where you're going to put a bookmark in it because it does that. You develop a really nice pace with it, and you really do want to keep turning the pages. And another thing, Harlan, that you capture, I think, very well in Hold Tight is, particularly in the character of Yasmin, is children can be very. And adults can be very mean and say things sometimes that we really don't think mean that much. But that's an age where a casual comment or something can have a profound impact on a child's life.
Well, it really does. I mean, one of the reasons I set my books, and especially Hold Tight, in the suburbs rather than the big city where there's a lot of danger, is that even in this placid pool, even the smallest pebble can really make a ripple. And you've seen that in your own community, and I've seen it in mine, where just one thing accidentally said, one slight, one overbearing coach, whatever it is, really can set things, set this delicate balance all the way off its ledge. So this is, again, one of the things that was really fun to explore in this book.
Mm-hmm. And Harlan, on page 354, I found it was very interesting, and this is something that kind of resonated through Hold Tight, was you talked about the incremental nature of crime, that sometimes we start out, and I love the example you used, was kind of like with a church lady whose car broke down, and she thinks, well, I'll just take $5 for a cab ride home.
Right.
And that can suddenly turn into justification and rationalization for doing just one thing after that. And the next thing you know, you maybe have started on a path that you had no idea you were going down.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, we human beings are wonderful at self-rationalization. And it happens all the time. Like you read in the paper about the church lady, the one who was going to church and super religious, who all of a sudden is pilfering for $100,000 out of the tills. And one day she just didn't walk in saying, ha ha ha, I'm going to steal $100,000. It had to have started with something small, and you sort of rationalize that, and you think, well, I'm not really getting paid for this. It's a volunteer job. I should get my lunch paid for, whatever it is. It always seems to start small, and we can justify that and keep growing. This is the danger where, all my books are like this. I love to find out where that line is drawn. If I say to you, would you kill somebody? Your answer is no. Well, will you kill somebody to save your child? The answer is yes. So where exactly is that line? Would you kill someone, make your child's life better? This is the place I like to play, and I don't like great evil and great good. I find that boring to write about.
Mm-hmm.
I think what makes Hold Tight work, I'm hoping what makes all my writing work, is that I'm not just trying to stir your pulse and stir your mind with quick turns, and I do all that. I twist and I turn and I'll fool you. But really, you need to stir the heart. What happens to these people in Hold Tight has to matter to you.
And some of the families are dealing with different levels of despair than others. And Spencer Hill, who is Adam's best friend, his parents perhaps are going through the most difficult situation that a parent could go through. And if you would talk for a moment about Spencer Hill and his importance in the novel.
Well, Spencer Hill's a teenager who, as the book opens, has already committed suicide. And his parents are trying to deal with the aftermath of that. And early on in the book, Spencer was supposedly alone the night of his suicide, but his mother, while looking at one of those Facebook pages that have these memorials, MySpace pages and Facebook have these memorial sort of things, she sees a photograph that tells her everything she thought happened that night is wrong. And that starts her on her way into the story, connecting her with everything that goes on here. And it was painful to write about it. But it was a really interesting issue to write about. She looks down sort of the street, and every household, when you look down your street, every household is a story. Every household has some degree of secrets. Every household has something going on that you don't know about or don't suspect. No one really knows what goes on behind that.
Mm-hmm.
That picket fence.
Mm-hmm. And Hold Tight has some bad guys in it, Pietra and Nash. And there was a quote from Pietra that I liked. You said, in the end, most people find revenge to be a wasted emotion. But then there are others that don't find it to be wasted, and so I really liked the characters that you created. I found them to be believable in kind of the depravity that they had, and that couldn't have been easy to do.
No, Nash and Pietro are nasty pieces of work. I like that sometimes. They're sort of almost fun characters in the sense that they provide a great deal of fright and violence. But again, to make them just outward monsters doesn't really interest me. Nash explains where he comes from, I think pretty well. Not that it justifies his behavior, but it explains where he's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes some of the most frightening parts of the book will be where he's actually making sense, where his rationalizations do have a point, yet he is not a good boy. He is not a good man. And again, that to me makes it more frightening. And much more compelling to read about, rather than some serial killer who's just running around hacking people up because that's how he gets his jollies. But that kind of character doesn't interest me. But this guy, he knows he's damaged, which I really liked. He's not he understands that what he's thinking is and what he's doing is wrong, and that sort of being self-aware, I think, gives him an edge in a dimension that you don't really see too often in these sort of characters.
Mm-hmm. Harlan, one of the topics that you or one of the clubs is called the Club Jaguar, and this is an interesting place, and one of the characters, Rosemary McDivitt, is the president and founder of this. And if you would, tell us a little bit about, this is a club for teenagers, but if you would, tell us how you came to bring Club Jaguar into the story.
Well, I don't want to give away too
right,
much,
exactly.
It's a little bit of a surprise, but, you take what you see in the headlines sometimes, or you just hear what's going on with kids and, mm-hmm. and drugs, for example, and you realize, and I'm always trying to predict what the next step is going to be, and clearly one of the things that we're seeing more of is prescription drugs, the mm-hmm. abuse of so-called legal drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Oxycontin can get you a high, and you can get addicted like it's heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And some people just have it lying in their cabinets, and easy for kids to grab or take. So that's where it kind of starts and snowballs, and this, I thought, was sort of the next step of how this can be distributed and done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I think that's a the OxyContin and that whole craze is it really has kind of hit epidemic proportions all over the country. I know here in Ohio, where the show originates, it's a major problem in the high schools here.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, because again, it's easy, you know, and it's interesting. Some of the early readers have already said, you know, I got painkillers from my knee operation just sitting in my bathroom. I haven't taken them. I just, you know, sort of, and easily your kid can just go in and take them.
Mm-hmm.
So these are, again, some of the situations. I deal with the real world. I deal with what I see and where I am. I don't write James Bond. I don't write Batman. I don't write superhero characters or, you know, conspiracies reaching the White House. I try, and especially in Hold Tight, to write about people like you and me. And I think that makes it more compelling. You will really relate to what Mike and Tia, or, you know, or Betsy and Ron or whoever are really going through in this book.
Mm-hmm. And Harlan, when you're writing a novel like Hold Tight versus the Myron Bolitar books that you write, is it a completely different mindset you write from in terms of keeping the suspense on the front burner and the type of outlining and plotting you're doing as you write it?
Actually, I've only written one Myron in the last 7 or 8 years,
yeah.
And I'm writing another one now. But it really uses the exact same muscles. The only difference is it's Myron's perspective, and I know the characters. This book has 7 or 8 or 9 lead characters. Myron is pretty much the lead in his own book. But other than the viewpoint mm-hmm. and the fact that Myron is somewhat better with his fists and with his investigative knowledge than, say, Mike Bai in Hold Tight would be, so that the process is pretty much the same. It's just, again, where I'm coming from on this.
Mm-hmm. And my guest today is Harlan Coben. We're discussing Hold Tight, recently published by Dutton. And Harlan, one of the things that really ratchets up the suspense and I think the anxiety level as well is when Hester Krimstein gets involved as the attorney, you're able to do some nice things with when you bring the legal aspect in, because she's telling her clients what to say or what to say and what not to say, and it becomes kind of interesting as a reader. You realize what a catch-22 sometimes people get themselves into.
Yeah, well, interesting enough, Hester Krimstein has been in about, oh my goodness, I think my last 7, maybe 8 books.
Mm-hmm.
She's a great attorney and she's great fun to write. She's kind of funny and funky and tough. And probably exactly what you would want if you needed an attorney.
Yeah.
And she's obnoxious as heck, and so I love to write her.
She's
and
great.
She's been with Myron, and she's been in my standalone books too.
That's what I thought.
So
yeah.
She seems to pop up a lot, and it's always like a breath of fresh air when she walks in the room for me.
Mm-hmm. And Harlan, now that that Hold Tight is hitting the shelves, what is it that you're happiest about as a writer that you've accomplished in Hold Tight? What are you happiest about stylistically with this novel?
Well, first of all, this is where it's all fun for me. I mean, Hold Tight's not a book until it's read.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I don't. It's like the Berkeley tree in the woods. If a tree falls and no one hears it, it doesn't make a sound. If I write a book and no one reads it, I don't exist as a writer. So this is the exciting part for me. A writer without a reader is clapping with one hand, and now the readers will take it and they'll read it, and that's the second hand. And they'll read Hold Tight, and a whole new Mike and Tia and Adam and all the characters will develop in their heads that'll be different from everybody else's all over the world, and that's a really cool thing for me to think about. But I think this is the strongest book, probably because it deals with 5 different families rather than just sort of one,
mm-hmm.
And that it really is grounded in what we all know. And hopefully, I'm still getting better. I don't, you know, it's hard to say. I work harder in each book. I always think I'm going to figure out the way, or I'm going to learn a formula or whatever else. It never seems to pan out. Each book is harder than the one before it. And this one was really a bear to write. But I can tell you that the early reviews and the early readers, I've never heard this enthusiastic. So I'm very, very excited about having people read Hold Tight.
That's fantastic. Well, Harlan, I always appreciate your time. You're a busy man, and congratulations on Hold Tight. I read it over the course of two evenings, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I do think that I like the complexity of having the number of families and the number of characters in it. And it held my attention from start to finish, and I just thoroughly enjoyed it. So congratulations on writing a great book, and I look forward to catching up with you when the next book comes out.
Thanks, Casey. Appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
Right.